This is The Naked Scientists with me, Chris Smith, and with Hannah Critchlow. Carl Dicerov is based at Stanford University in California, and in 2005 he came up with a new technique called optogenetics. And this is a way of controlling nerve cells using light. Carl, how does it work?
Well, optogenetics works by using light to open ion channels. We've heard a lot about ion channels and how they can be controlled by the electrodes that Hodgkin and Huxley used. Of course, those could only be put into a squid axon. And if you want to study the mammalian brain, where things are 1,000 times smaller, you've got problems with putting enough electrodes in. We've also heard about chemicals that can affect ion channels, can open them and close them. And those are great. Those can get all the way through the brain, but they don't have this millisecond precision that is the normal currency of information flow in the brain. So what if you could have both? What if you could have high speed and allow access to many different neurons at once, even in, let's say, the mammalian brain? So what we do is we found that there are some microorganisms that make just the perfect tool for this. They do it for their own reasons, not to help us out, but it turns out to be the perfect thing. There are small algae, small kinds of bacteria as well, that make light-activated ion channels, and they use this to sense what's going on in their environment, to respond to it appropriately, to generate energy for a whole range of different functions.
So these are marine microorganisms,
that's
which
right.
just happen to make a chemical structure which is sensitive to light. They use it for one job, to regulate their behavior, but you're saying you can steal that and use it for your purposes.
We did. We capitalized on the millions of years of evolution that went into designing these beautiful proteins. And we bring them into mammalian neurons, and we can turn mammalian neurons, which normally don't care about light very much, turn them into very sensitive, precise, light-responding units.
So you take, the gene from the alga, which would normally make that channel that the alga uses, and you can put that gene into the nerve cell, making the nerve cell respond to light in the same way the algae would.
That's right. And it sounds a little far-fetched. In fact, a lot of people thought that it would be very unlikely that genes from these algae or these ancient forms of bacteria would work well in mammalian cells, that they would get to the right place in the cell, that they would have the right supporting components that would help them function well. And to some extent, they needed some help. We had to engineer the tools a bit to help them work well. In the end, though, it works quite well now. And we can now flash on pulses of light of different colors. We can turn on and off different kinds of cells, even while animals are freely behaving.
So you put the gene from the alga into the nerve cell, and it's in some way color selective, so you can use different colors to control different subsets of cells.
That's right. Some algae make proteins that respond to blue light. Some archaebacteria make proteins that respond to amber light. And in fact, there's a whole spectrum of these that are made by nature and that we can tune somewhat also with some protein engineering. And we can put one kind of protein into one kind of cell, another kind of protein into another kind of cell, and even start to act like the conductors of the orchestra, if you will, and have different elements, different instruments play at different times or at the same time.
How do you put the genes into the brain cells that you want them to go into in the animal that you want to study?
Yes, well, this was the hardest thing. After the initial proof of principle that these tools could work well in cells, then the question became, well, how are you actually going to make it useful? How are you going to target these into the cells of interest? And this took a few years to sort out. It was helped by the fact that these are all-in-one proteins, that there's just a single gene that makes a single protein that does all the jobs. It gets the photons from light, and it delivers the ion flow. So we only had to put one thing in. And we use a range of genetic tricks, actually. We can use little bits of DNA that are called promoters or enhancers, and different cells that do different jobs will turn on or off these little bits of DNA that govern the expression or the production of proteins in cells. If we attach these little bits of DNA, the promoters or enhancers, to the gene for the light-responsive protein, and then we put that into all the cells in the region, it'll only get turned on in some, and that gives us a very powerful kind of specificity. There are other kinds, too. For example, we can use the very remarkable shape and morphology of neurons. If we put the gene into one region of the brain, but we deliver light into another region of the brain that may be far away, we can selectively, therefore, stimulate the cells that live in one region but send a connection to the other region where we're delivering the light. And that turns out to be very powerful. We call that projection targeting, and that you don't actually need to know any genetics at all. You just need to know your anatomy.
How do you get the light that's going to do those jobs into the right bit of the nervous system in your animal?
Yes, that was another thing we had to sort out. In fact, a lot of skepticism early on, people said, well, light doesn't penetrate very deeply into the brain, and that's true. It'll only go about a millimeter in before it's 99% scattered and absorbed. But we developed fiber optic methods for targeting very deep brain structures, and so now we can play in patterns of activity into very deep structures in the middle of the brain and the brain stem, even while animals are behaving.
And just very briefly, what can you do with this that we couldn't do before?
Well, now we can play in precise patterns of activity into defined cells. And I'll give you just, you know, one example. I'm interested in motivation and reward, what makes people want to do things, what makes them feel good about doing things. This is something that is impaired in depression and various kinds of psychiatric disease. And we're now playing in different patterns of activity into a kind of cell called the dopamine neuron. And we're determining that some patterns of activity, but not others, turn out to control feelings of reward or motivation. And that may help us understand these psychiatric diseases.
Carl Dicerothe from Stanford. Thank you very much, Carl. Amazing work.